Hi, I'm Femi OK. Thanks for watching the stream. By November the 15th, there will be 8 billion human beings in the world. That's according to a projection by the United Nations. So some questions that I have. How do we respond to being one in 8 billion? How do we maintain a decent quality of life for all of us? And then what happens after 8 billion humans in the world? Those are the questions I have for our expert panel. I'm sure you have questions to ask them as well. The comment section is right here on YouTube. Be part of today's show. Hello, Rachel and Jennifer and Alex. It's so good to have this expert panel here today on the stream. Rachel, please say hello to our audience around the world. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Hi, Femi, and greetings to all. My name is Dr. Rachel Snow, and I'm the Chief of Population and Development at the UN Population Fund based in New York. And we support census and how to use census data in more than 130 countries across the world.
Hello, Jennifer. Welcome to the stream. Tell the viewers around the world who you are and what you do.
Hi, Femi. I'm so glad to be here. I'm Dr. Jennifer Shuba. I am a scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center and author of the new book, 8 Billion and Counting, How Sex, Death, and Migration Shape Our World.
Thanks for being with us. And Alex, welcome back to the stream. Good to see you again. Remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Thank you, Femi. Thank you for having me back. I am Professor Alex Eze, Donsife Professor of Global Health at the Donsife School of Public Health, Drexel University in Philadelphia. I am a demographer by training, and previously I served as the Executive Director of the African Population and Health Research Center in Nairobi, and I also serve on the UN High-Level Advisory Board for Economic and Social Affairs.
So, Guess, it's really hard for me to grapple with what 8 billion people looks like, what that feels like. Well, I feel different on November the 15th than I do right now, Rachel.
No, you won't. In simple terms, this has been a while coming, and you won't feel much on the 15th of November.
Jennifer, when we talk about a number like 8 billion, if you're studying population, then you knew it was coming. I remember at school we used to be worried about how many more billions of people can survive on the earth, and here we are at 8 billion. What does that mean for most of us? How should we think about that number?
Well, you know, I also remember studying this in school, and actually I think that's how I ended up making a career out of studying population, because to Rachel's point, you know, will we feel any different? I remember sitting in 1999, I think it was October 15th, 1999, in a college classroom in Atlanta, where I'm from, and my professor was late to class that day, and then she paused in the door and had a black armband on, and she marched into class and said, "Today world population has hit 6 billion people. This is a travesty. I never had kids. You shouldn't either." And so I think for many people, there's this sense that every time we hit a billion, this is it. We're about to, it's like we're going to tip over the edge, you know, when you're pouring something in a bowl and you're just waiting for it to spill over. But here we still are, which I think is a really good thing for us to remember. I've seen a few billion in my lifetime, and I like to think of myself as pretty young. So I don't think we have to look at this as some doomsday finally arriving.
Alex, does that number mean anything to somebody who studies demographics? Like, you knew this number was coming. You understand what it means. Does it give you pause?
Thanks, Femi. Not necessarily. It doesn't give me a pause. It just simply means that it is 8 billion November 15th. By November 16th, it will be 8 billion and something. And by 2086, it will be 10.4 billion. So we will continue to grow as we go forward. It's just a number in many ways. But my sense is that it is also a time for us to take a deeper look at what does that really mean for us as a human race.
I'm just looking at some of the commentary we have from our viewers around the world. This is Baba Sheyu. Baba Sheyu says, "The world isn't overpopulated. It's just a matter of management." Rachel, you're nodding. Articulate your nod.
Indeed, I would nod. And I also want to point out that the growth of the population is slowing down. You know, the pace at which the world was growing peaked in 1964. And so we've been declining in terms of the pace. You know, we're growing by less than 1% per year. We've got, I think, 53 countries in the world that are now in population decline. China, for example, 1.4 billion is peaking this year. And by 2100, they're projected to be down to 800 million. So things are turning, the pace is slowing. This is really important, I think. It's going to give us time to catch up.
One way,
but I do think I see why people feel like this, though. I mean, I think all three of us are used to people throwing doomsday scenarios at us, because while we know these global trends, and I'm sure all three of us are on the same page with wanting to emphasize the slowing pace of growth and population aging, I know that for some people it can feel really different. And that's because that 8 billion number disguises the diversity of trends around the world. And we've really never been so far apart in terms of our birth and death and even migration trends. And so, you know, there are areas in the world where fertility is still very high, population growth is high, and people feel the environmental strains that come from a very basic relationship between people and the environment around them.
Femi, if I might come in here, I think also one of the things that we would need to pay attention to is the understanding that the 8 billion masks a huge diversity that we currently experience across different parts of the world. This year alone, we have more than 40 countries and territories that are experiencing population decline. And our traditional preoccupation and focus on rapid population growth has clouded our thinking to clearly understand the implications of these divergent trends that we are seeing around the world, that there are as many countries having population decline, and it will continue to be
Alex,
an issue going forward.
Which are the countries?
Population growth.
I don't want you to mention all 40 countries. Can you give us a couple of examples of the countries where their population is going down?
Oh, if you think, for instance, a place like South Korea, its population is currently at 52 million. It is projected to be at 24 million by 2100. Ooh. The last time South Korea was in the 24 million people was in the 50s. So it is a massive change that will be occurring in a number of countries. By 2050, more than 90 countries and territories will be experiencing population decline.
Rachel, I see you nodding.
And it's really interesting when we think about the, juxtaposing South Korea's change over time with some of the places where population is still growing, because on the flip side of that, there are 8 countries in the world that will account for more than half of world population growth between now and 2050. And one of those is Egypt, which, Egypt's leadership had famously compared Egypt's population to South Korea's many decades ago in 2008, and had noted that many decades ago, both countries had similar population sizes. And then they just totally went in two different directions after that.
I think the diversity that both Jennifer and Alex are emphasizing is like hugely important. I think it's really part of the big story for the 8 billion is we're so diverse. And another example of that is that Europe on average, like the median age in Europe is close to 40. It's like 41 and a half. The median age in sub-Saharan Africa is 17. And so it's not just that the pace of growth is really different in these countries, but we have very different age structures. So, you know, you want to understand and kind of create a global community, but we're looking at governments and countries here that are dealing with very different populations in terms of age. And so the thinking may be different. That's going to take some diplomacy and some effort between us to have a more unified response to global crises.
I want to bring a new voice into our conversation, and this is a professor of global development at Cornell University. Alex, I'm going to play this comment for you, and I'd really be interested on where you take the idea next. So here's Parfait.
The 8 billion population is an important milestone, but what it means is going to vary quite a bit across countries. In developing regions where population is still growing, one main concern is going to be about inequality. The birth rates tend to decline in most of African countries from the top down. And what that means is you have an increasing concentration of fertility among the poor. and at a time when the levels of education are rising, where the quality of education and the cost of education is rising. What that means is that you're going to have increasing differences in the educational opportunities that are available to children in the upper tier of the income distribution compared to children who come from families that are poorer.
Thanks, Femi. I think there are a couple of things to break down here in what Parfait indicated. The first is, if you look at the countries where fertility is still very high, women are still having many children, like 4, 5, 6. In a country like Niger or DR Congo or Mali, where the rate of growth of the population is at 3% or more, it means that that population is doubling every 20 years or so. In Niger, it's actually every 18 years. In DR Congo, it's about every 21 years. So within that period, it is very difficult, nearly impossible, for that country to be able to double the investments they are making in health, education, nutrition, jobs, all the things that constitute well-being and human improvements in human capacity and those improvements. So in that instance, then you it's difficult to maintain the quality of life as it is, and you need to be able to double those investments and capacity over that short period of time to maintain the current levels of inadequate coverage of health and education and all that. So that's the problem. The other big challenge, I think, when people think about 8 billion, is the fact that there is a significant shift in where these populations are based and located. Currently, Africa accounts for about 18% of the global population. Right. It's projected to be about 24-25% by 2050 and 46% by 2100. So when you look at that statistic and you then think about it, oh, nearly one in two people in the world will be in Africa. What does that mean for global governance and for equity and for all of, and how can
Alex,
we...
Alex, what does that mean? Does that mean that Africa will be the most powerful continent in the world?
Mm-hmm. Well, it will mean different things for different people. And again, for me, I say it's not a question of whether we are 4 billion or 4.6 billion or 6 billion Africans. It's the question of what quality of people are these? Are they all educated, healthy, productive citizens? Or are they sick and uneducated and poor? And so that really matters. And for me, the point about countries with very high rates of growth of the population currently is that their ability to make the necessary investments in improving human quality will be constrained by the rate of growth of their population.
Alex, I hear you. There's so much we could talk about just on the continent of Africa. I'm going to go push on it just a little bit, because if we know our population is growing, we know this is happening, planning and urban planning is going to be absolutely critical. Rachel, I want you to listen to Robin King, because Robin King has a thought, and then build off Robin's thought. Here she is.
Urban planning should be more participatory, with citizens of different ages, social groups, ethnicities, and different geographic locations within the city, so that everyone together can create a vision of what they want the city to be tomorrow, 2 generations from now, 5 generations from now, as urban planning deals with infrastructure that's going to last a very long time beyond the generations of the folks that are involved in it right now. In addition, the process should help us educate each other about what sustainable consumption patterns really are, so that we can leave the planet better for future generations.
Well, she's right that there needs to be more collective planning, but even to plan from a single government, you gotta have excellent data. And part of why we push the census and we need to make these, you know, population and census happen around the world is because, you know, governments absolutely need to be able to project what is coming in the next 2-3 decades. There was a great stat or frightening stat from the World Bank I came across recently, and it said, goodness, that's something like across the continent of Africa, you know, the infrastructure for education at the moment can only accommodate about 40% of school-age children. And as Alex says, we have more and more children who will be coming in the region. So, you know, investment is crucial. Urbanization is happening quickly. We need excellent data. We need planning. We need a participatory planning. And we need a global engagement. It's true. It's going to be very, very difficult for governments to do this alone.
I am just.
But it is cool to be in the field of demography, though. Mm, I mean, I'm sure Rachel and Alex feel the same way. We stand out among the trends because we can see the future and other people can't. Yeah. And it's because so many people of the future are already born. So when you think about the planning that needs to happen, I totally agree with Rachel that we need more data. But the good news is it's not as if we have no idea how many kindergarten classrooms we'll need in 4 years, how many seats we will need.
That's a
we
good
know
point.
Because we can
Jennifer,
look at the, in
but
there
did,
today.
But are various governments and various communities, are they planning knowing that? You're right. I didn't think of it like that. Once you've got children in kindergarten or nursery or junior school, you know what they're going to need over their lifetime. Are you seeing that? Because you may well be able to see the future, but you can also see disaster coming too.
You can. I mean, you know, and I think this is where I'm always emphasize to people that the same population trend in two different countries can look completely different. So, you know, a couple of communities that I know that are planning for this is the national security community. You know, they can look at those kindergarten classrooms today and think about their potential recruiting pool for the military, you know, in just 15 years or so. So, you know, they're well aware of this and they take a long view on things. Anyway,
right.
But if we look at something like Social Security, you know, we don't exactly know what age people will retire. People might think that they do, but it differs widely around the world. The average age of workforce exit in France is 61 years, but in Japan, it's 71 years. And so, you know, it can differ even among old countries. And so some of these rules of the game or institutions, like in a democracy, it's really hard to change policy because voters say, yeah, no, thanks. We're not doing that. But in countries that are aging, but they don't necessarily give the people voice in changing policy, you actually might see retirement policies and ages increased much faster.
All right. Yes, I'm going to ask you to do something very quickly for me, Alex, if I may, because I want to bring in our audience who are watching, because often they have misconceptions about what population growth means. And I'm going to give you each 30 seconds to answer a question like this. All right. So how many people can the Earth sustain? Alex, do you want to take that one?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's not a simple answer of
yes.
X number, but it is a function of the behavior of the people that are on Earth. It's our per capita carbon emission. In saying the U.S. is different from Niger, and it depends on our consumption patterns. It depends on our productivity as a group, and all these factors matter. I think with increased inequality, it makes it harder to sustain a much larger population. But if we have
right.
a more equal society in many ways, we can support a whole lot more
Trevor
people.
Summers asked this. The world is overpopulated, or says this. Things will never get better. It's too late. Rachel, instant reaction.
Not at all. Not at all. 8 billion peoples, 8 billion potentially brilliant new ideas that will increase food production, that will figure out new, very cool ways for people to learn on the internet, that will think about, you know, ways to multiply the number of teachers. I'm much more optimistic.
All right. This is Paul on YouTube. He's watching us right now, Jennifer. Paul says that government planning, those individuals who make up government can't see beyond the next election. Cynicism from YouTube. Who would have thought it?
I actually don't disagree with Paul. Is that my husband, Paul? Because that also seems like something he would say. He might be in the other room. Yes. And that's why I tend to be, I'm also an optimist in general, but if there's anywhere that the pessimism starts to sneak in, it actually is when we think about democracies and how hard it is to change policy. Now, and that is because elected leaders have these short-term views. However, I will say that even something simple like just to stick on retirement for a second, because it really does matter, official retirement age is one thing, but there are all sorts of rules, a whole rainbow of rules around ways that people are able to exit the workforce. And sometimes you can get some play at the margins that make a big difference in the overall trend.
Let's just have a look at what Raya added to our conversation. She joined us a little bit earlier on and told us this. And we're looking at managing and impact 8 billion people. Let's have a listen.
Population growth means the demand for water, food and energy will increase. So this naturally means that greenhouse gas emissions will increase as well. But it won't be that high, particularly if the level of consumption is kept, say, at the level of low-income countries of today. So the impact of population and climate change is likely to be through an increase in income level rather than population size.
I think what Raya did there was channeling a lot of the angst in our audience and around the world, where people are thinking, there's so many of us on this earth. How can the earth possibly sustain it? I am going to look ahead now to 2050 and where the population will be in 2050. You are well ahead of me, so let's do this together, guess. Estimated world population by 2050 will be 9.7 billion. And then what part of the world will see the biggest growth? Well, across the African continent, expected to contribute more than half of this population increase. But populations of 61 countries are projected to decrease by 1% or more. And then here's the good news. We don't really talk about the good news so much. It's important. Average global lifespan by 2050 will increase to around 77.2 years, which is up about 4 years from where it is currently. And Jennifer, this is the good news of this 8 billion. Is the reason why there are so many people on the earth is because we're healthier and living longer, as well as babies being born in some parts of the world. There's more than one thing happening here that we should be celebrating, that, wow, we're living so long.
Absolutely. And we should be celebrating population aging. I mean, yeah. I think there's a tendency to, whatever the trend is, people think, well, that's just bad news.
Yeah.
There are times in history where there are too many people, and then there are times there's too few people. It's like Goldilocks and the porridge. It's never just right. So when I see numbers about population aging, I think, how fantastic. Women and partners are able to choose how many children they want. They're able to act on that. It is generally an indicator that there's widespread education, that quality of life is high, and that people are living longer. Yeah. Well, let's not be upset about that, especially when we've wrung our hands over high fertility for decades. Well, now we're saying, wait, there's too many people. And I think also we have to be careful, because one thing that hasn't come up so far is, who gets blamed for all of this? It's typically women. The women are having too many or too few children. So when people say overpopulation, I think they want to say it's those women over there who are having too many children, and they don't think about their own role and their own consumption and their lifestyles.
There is some.
Yeah, I do want to. Can I jump in here?
Yeah, please, Rachel, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to jump in the comment that, let's remember that there are still millions of women who don't have access to modern contraception, who don't have access to still primary education, who, if they get pregnant at 14 or 15, are not able to finish school. So we do still have quite a bit of work to do in terms of assuring. As Jennifer was sort of just alluding to, we want to have a world where everybody can choose the number and the timing of children. There's no question. That's good for kids. It's good for communities. It's good for everyone.
Yeah.
But it isn't the case at this juncture still. We have, you know, something in the round of like 200 million people, I mean, who still don't have full access to reproductive rights.
Rachel, it's a really good point for me to bring in one last voice into our conversation, and that is Florence's voice, who ends on the point that you just made. Here she is.
Our population continues to grow by 8 million people per year. We should be concerned. Climate change, deforestation, water and food shortages, pollution, as well as biodiversity loss, which we never talk enough about, are all becoming difficult to manage with our ever-increasing numbers. Additionally, the people who are affected the most by a growing population are the young girls and women who are supposed to be the childbearers and child-rearers. Can we do anything about this? Yes, we can bring the numbers down. We can do positive, ethical, as well as cost-effective things that can benefit human beings, as well as take pressure off our planet.
This is such a huge topic. I would happily speak to Rachel and Jennifer and Alex for another hour. I don't have that time, so I just have time to say thank you so much for helping us understand what 8 billion people on the earth actually means in reality. Thank you for joining our conversation today. I'll see you next time. Take care.